Welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack the Tappet Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Center for High School Graduations here at Car Talk.
How can we move
Talk
around
Plaza.
So much? Notice every week we're broadcasting from a different place.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Triangulated on us?
I have a question for you. You know, there are many high school graduations around this time of year.
And yeah.
Since this is a big audience for us, or at least the average mental age of our audience is like 17.
17, 18, yeah.
I thought we might be able to give them the benefit of our unique perspectives.
Like, you know? Give high school graduates the benefit of our unique perspectives?
For example, what one decision that you've made since graduating from high school would you make differently if you had it to do all over again? If you had a chance to kind of rewrite the book.
Rewrite? You know, it's interesting. My son...
Just answer the question. I don't need any...
I have to build on it here. I have to give you the preface, the background, the prologue. That my son also graduated, not from high school, but from grammar school the other day.
Yes.
And...
with some fanfare, I might add.
Some fanfare, yes. And they had a little party, and at the party, one of the parents of the students said to me and a group of other people who were sitting around on the front stoop of the school, if you could be any age you wanted to be, what age would you want to be? A similar question. And what decisions would you make? And it's the same. It's in the spirit.
Oh, I'd answer either question.
Either question.
I don't know, you can't answer his question because I'm sure you've had opportunity to think about that.
What was the question again? If I had one decision to make over again?
Yeah, or if you could have changed the decision that you made.
Remember the time the guy said, hey, you want to come to the radio station
and do a show,
do
about,
a
cars.
Show about cars? And I said, yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would do that again. What about you?
When you invited me to come on the show with you, I think...
That's right.
No, actually, I regret, and I have regretted all my life, and I've given this advice, this sage advice to my children. I regretted not ever having grown my hair long. When I was a young man and
when I was a young man courting the girls.
People were growing, young men and women too, but mostly young men, were growing their hair very long.
Yes.
And I thought that I would be different and leave my hair normal length.
I recall that.
And I regret that to this day because now I no longer have hair.
But you still have the opportunity to let it grow long.
What? Let what grow long?
No, you could let the back grow and then grow and grow and grow. I have a little ponytail back there like Louis has.
No, well, I told my kids to grow their hair down to their knees if they want.
That's it? That's the most sage advice.
Everything else I've done is
out
been...
of the 20 million high school graduates listening to you. The
grow your hair voice, down to your knees.
Your advice is grow your hair long.
No, that's not my advice. That was what I would do differently. Everything else I did was perfect. I have no changes. There are no changes I would have made.
Yeah, no, that I would say that too. I have no changes. In fact, when the woman asked me what age would I want to be, I would want to be exactly the age I am now. Because if you weren't exactly this age,
how would you know?
Well, you'd miss all the things that happened like yesterday.
That's right.
And I had a great time
could you
yesterday.
Lock in? If you could lock in at one age, what age would that be?
You wouldn't want to lock in. Why would you want to lock in?
Oh, yeah. When I was 10, it was great. 10 was great. Think about when you were 10.
Yeah.
Right. The Civil War just ended.
Actually,
I mean, all kinds of exciting things
happened.
No,
actually, now that
I
think of it, if I had to choose, I would choose to not graduate from high school. My senior year in high
school.
There
were a lot of kids that did
that. How would you like to just keep reliving your senior year in high school? That is great.
Can we take a call?
Yeah, fine.
If you'd like to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello.
By the way, you know what that number is in binary? Have we ever used this?
Yes, we have.
I had it here. 1-0-0-0-1-1-0-0-1-0-1-0-1-1-1-1-0-0-0-0-1-1-0-1-1-0-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-
Car Talk.
Hi, guys.
Yes.
This is Carlene in Seattle.
Carlene.
Hi, Carlene.
Yeah. I-N-E?
No, it's with a K, and it's E-N-E.
It's with a K?
Yeah.
Get out.
And it's E-N-E.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
Seattle.
That figures.
Okay.
Carlene, that's an interesting name.
Yeah, well, I've got an interesting problem.
Go ahead.
I have a 96 Ford Explorer.
Mm-hmm.
A few months ago, on a cold, damp morning, which we seem to have plenty of out here, I started to drive to work, and I get this squeak, 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 timing to, like, how fast the tires are going. So, of course, when I'm going faster, it goes squeak, 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 squeak.
Got it.
Up to a high-pitched squeal.
A high-pitched, like, continuous squeal?
When I'm going fast. But when I slow down, it slows down to, like, a, you know, squeak, squeak, squeak. Okay. It would disappear, like, by the second stop sign after I had totally stopped the car by pushing on the brakes, of course.
Got it.
You know, I thought, okay, a brake problem. And so I took it in, and they changed the front brake pads, although they said they weren't totally wore out, but maybe it was uneven, and drove off with the squeak.
Okay. Did you come right back?
No, I called them on the phone, and they said, well, you know, you probably don't have it quite right. It's probably that serpentine belt thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so then I thought, going to a Ford dealership. You know, let's go right to the Ford company.
Exactly. No messing around with these bozos anymore.
Right. You know, get to the bottom of it.
Go to the guys that really know how to charge you.
Yeah, right. Oh, well, anyway, I drive in. They can hear it. They're really excited. They say, we'll get to it first thing in the morning. We probably have to take something apart and repack or oil or lube something and put it back together and put it in.
Yeah.
So they call me the next day at noon, come get your car. I'm all excited. I get there, and they say, we didn't have to do that. Your brake pads are brand new, which I hope they were.
Mm.
And what you have is an annoyance squeal. Huh. No charge.
But it's still there.
Oh, it's still there. They diagnosed it an annoyance squeal.
But did you tell them that it wasn't there before? I mean, it was there before you put the new pads in?
Yes, and they said it's an annoyance squeal, but it's okay because your brake system is okay. You're safe.
Did you ask them why it wasn't there before?
They said, don't know, can't figure it out, but don't worry, it's just something that's annoying.
And, well, see, and don't forget, they called you and said, your car is ready, come and get it.
And no charge. That
and no
really
charge.
Suspicious.
But the charge was that you brought it there, you had to get a ride home, you had to go back.
Right.
It only took you 2 or 3 hours.
No, I think it's all right. I think that's okay. I mean, don't forget, they didn't call you and ask you to bring the car in.
Right.
You volunteered to go there. So it's not their problem. And I think it's laudable that they didn't charge you.
Well, that's true.
They probably didn't charge you because they knew that they couldn't get rid of the noise.
Well, obviously, I drove off with the squeal.
See, I think the annoyance squeal is coming from a slightly out of true brake disc.
Brake disc.
It's got a high spot in it.
Yeah, and it's not turning. In other words, if you looked at one spot, it would pop up once in a while. Boop, 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 boop.
Right, it's got what's called runout.
Uh-huh.
And there really is no fix for it, except they could try machining the discs.
Mm-hmm.
And you should, if they're really convinced that it's coming from one of the front wheels,
mm-hmm.
ask them. For all the Ford dealers should have a machine which allows them to machine the discs on the car.
Okay.
We have a thing called the Pro Cut, which we hook up, and you set the thing up, and you walk away, and it machines the disc right on the vehicle. And it's wonderful, this thing.
And when you walk away, where do you go? I mean, you just have to have coffee? Or?
Parallel universe.
Okay, but I have like a new twist to this thing. I drove the car all the way to Montana and back last week.
Yeah.
And cattle weren't stampeding in the pastures as I drove by, which I took as a good sign that the squeal wasn't too loud. But when I was coming back, I noticed that at high speeds, when I go to brake, it sets up a shimmy.
Oh!
That's perfect. So, that's very, very good, Carleen.
This couldn't have been scripted any better. And the reason it's shimmying is that you have a disc that's warped and out of round, out of true.
Now, big bucks here or?
No. I mean, if you go back to this dealership and ask them to machine the discs, like I mentioned before, they'll do that and it'll take care of both problems.
All right. Okay, you guys. Thanks a lot.
See you, Carleen.
Good luck.
Another satisfied customer.
Not yet.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Ed from Bloomfield, New Jersey.
Hi, Ed.
Ed.
I'm also from Brookline, Massachusetts. Spent about 10 years up there back in the mid-70s.
Also, now you're in New Jersey in the Witness Protection Program.
Yeah, sort of. Well, everyone in New Jersey is in the Witness Protection Program.
We noticed.
Especially in Bloomfield. We're right in the heartland.
Yeah, so what's wrong with your car, Ed?
But anyway, well, I want to tell you, first of all, that when I was in Brookline, I was there going to Northeastern University, I did also attend your car talk, preventive maintenance, basic car maintenance program.
Yeah.
I don't know if you give them anymore.
No.
Were you the guy that sat in front and kept asking all the questions, a really annoying guy?
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, I remember.
That's me, but yeah, you gave it through this like New Age spiritual consciousness.
Oh, yeah, I remember we had the candles and the incense and all that.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, the healing crystals.
The way you guys can insinuate yourself into these situations.
Yeah. Did we sell you a healing crystal for your car?
Yeah, it broke. I dropped on the corner.
Well, that might have been when we were into the pyramids.
Anyhow, well, I do have a mysterious problem, though.
Yeah.
A New Jersey problem. Actually, it's my son's problem.
A New Jersey
problem. He recently bought a Taurus. This is his first car buying on his own.
Yeah.
And it's 34,000 miles on it. And we're having a problem with it not starting. In other words, you turn the key and nothing at all happens. Just silence, like a dead battery.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, this only happens after the car has been run for a certain amount of time and then stopped briefly, like to get gas or to get a speeding ticket, something like that. Which is a freak occurrence. Well, this is why we bought the Taurus. It's a gray four-door Taurus. We figured it's as close to invisible as we could get.
And he still got a speeding ticket.
Yeah, he still got the ticket. But anyhow.
And then had to endure the embarrassment afterwards when the cop says, okay, you can go now. Says, no, I can't.
And the car don't start.
Yeah.
And this is how it's happened like that. And it happens randomly, not every time, but kind of intermittently that way. And the way we restart the thing is you pull off the positive battery cable and put it back on. Then the car will start fine and it'll go.
Really?
And if you do nothing, will it not start for an hour?
It just sits there. Well, we've never sat on the side of the road for an hour.
What's the longest you've ever sat by the side of the road?
Oh, only 15, 20 minutes maybe.
15, 20 minutes, at which time you took off the battery cable, put it back on, and it started.
Yeah, we fiddled around in there thinking, well, we started out by sort of, you know, just twisting it, thinking maybe the cable was bad.
Yeah, well, that was good thinking.
Well, I mean, I would certainly suspect the connection between the battery cable and the battery.
And pulling it on. See, the way I think, which is probably too complicated, I'm thinking of a microprocessor being, you know, rebooted. And cleared out.
Yeah, no,
going too far with that.
Yeah, oh yeah, you definitely. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, this is basic stuff.
This is okay. one of the only remaining pieces of the car that is truly old technology,
and that my brother still understands.
And I still understand.
Well, it's the only part that I understand because I took your course.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, basically, you have the ignition switch, which is the thing where you stick the key. Okay.
Okay.
And you have the starter motor.
Mm-hmm.
And the battery,
mm-hmm.
and a solenoid. And in this case, because it's an automatic transmission, you have what's called a neutral safety switch.
Mm-hmm.
So when you turn the key, you're trying to send current from the battery to the solenoid, which turns the starter, which makes the thing start. But it has to go through the neutral safety switch first to make sure that you're in either park or neutral.
Yeah.
So the problem could be the switch, it could be the starter, it could be the neutral safety switch, it could be the battery or one of the connections.
Okay.
And I think it's the connection in your case.
Okay. Just the cable itself?
I think you have a crummy connection. Because when you take it off and put it back on, it starts right up, right?
Yeah, it will.
Hmm.
You know, okay. I would clean those connections. And if that doesn't solve the problem, if cleaning the terminal ends doesn't solve the problem, then the next time it doesn't start, tow it someplace, and they can immediately figure out what it is because they'll see if there's current getting to the solenoid.
How old does this battery look?
It doesn't look bad. It looks clean. You know, it doesn't have a lot of crud or anything on the terminals, but it may be original with the car.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to guess that it's not the connection.
Mm-hmm.
From my vast knowledge of batteries,
okay.
I'm going to say that you need a battery.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. How I feel about this. I just have these, you know, the healing of hands. Remember that chapter when
we did the
laying on of hands?
Yeah,
remember that?
I remember that. That was my favorite
well,
part.
It's also
yeah, remember that part of the class where we all put on the blindfolds and we went through everyone's pockets?
I remember levitating that horizon. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, that was quite an exciting moment for me.
And then we fell, you know?
Well, I'm going to guess that when you take this to the garage to have it looked at,
okay.
they're going to figure out that you need a battery.
No, don't listen to him.
I think you have a dying...
He's a moron.
You have a dying cell in that battery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that would explain how that cell gets rejuvenated in the 6 seconds it takes you to remove the terminal end and put it back on, that cell springs back into life.
Okay. That's right.
There you go. Okay, that's why. Never mind. That's why we retired him early. We offered him early retirement.
It has to do
get out and stay out
with the laying on of hands.
Okay.
He's inadvertently laying his hands on that battery.
Well, he is,
and that's what's making it come
still,
back to
still
life.
Carrying some of that magnetism that I got in the core.
Yeah. Hey, look, my brother's analysis was a complete guess. I'm allowed the same liberty, and it's the battery, not the connection. I'm going for that. Call us back, Ed, and let us know.
Okay, I'll call you back and let you know.
The reason it happens when it gets hot is that the connection is not tight between the post of the battery and the terminal.
Mm-hmm.
And as the thing heats up, as you're trying to pump current, you ready for this?
Yeah, I'm ready.
From the alternator back into the battery, you're heating up the terminal. And you
will I get my shoes up off the floor here?
And we know that when you heat up a ring, the hole gets bigger.
Yeah.
And you're getting a poorer connection, and that's it. Why it
okay.
doesn't restart
Fine.
Hot.
Fine.
That also makes sense to me.
Yeah. I know it did. Everything made sense to you when you took the course.
Most of your suggestions are pretty cheap to fix anyway.
Yeah.
So we can just do it all.
Thanks for calling.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
See you. Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Bye.
Okay, Tommy, look, are you ready for your weekly fill-in-the-blank puzzler hints?
Go ahead.
All right, fill in the blank. Experts who have examined you say it would take a blank to find your brain.
Well, a head trimmer, among other things.
No, that's to find your skull. To find your brain, you'd need a magnifying glass. Okay, next hint. Having examined your brain with a magnifying glass, one scientist declared it resembles a blank piece of paper.
A blank piece of paper.
That's it?
What?
The puzzle was about a magnifying glass and a blank piece of paper.
What?
I was trying to make it easy for you. Anyway, I'll have the answer in just a minute.
When I was just a young boy, my daddy put me on his knee. He let me steer the Buick around Nassau County. He taught me the rules of driving. Watch out for the other guy. And if you want to live a good long life, don't ever let your mother drive. 'Cause my mother was the other guy. My mother was the other guy. She never saw a stop sign and always crossed yellow lines. That's my mother. She's the other guy.
And even though the NPR landscaper takes a long, hard look at his wood chipper whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.
This message comes from Car Talk and NPR sponsor BetterHelp, a truly affordable online counseling service. Fill out a questionnaire online and get matched with a licensed counselor best suited to your mental health needs. Whether it's depression, anxiety, or trauma, BetterHelp will help you overcome what stands in the way of your happiness. Learn more at BetterHelp.com and get 10% off your first month with promo code CARTALK. BetterHelp. Get help anytime, anywhere.
Support for NPR comes from Newman's Own Foundation, working to nourish the common good by donating all profits from Newman's Own food products to charitable organizations that seek to make the world a better place. More information is available at newmansownfoundation.org.
Hey, y'all, I'm Sam Sanders, host of It's Been a Minute. There is a lot going on in the world. So on my show, my guest and I make sense of the news and culture through conversation. It feels like we're living in three movies at once.
That's a good way to put it.
It feels like a Mike Judge movie. It feels like a Spike Lee movie. And it feels like a Michael Bay movie. Like
Every Tuesday and Friday, listen and subscribe now to It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. And you may recall that this one came from Malcolm Ross McDonald, who designed the evolution of the modern mechanic T-shirt.
Yes, and quite a job he did.
Well, indeed. So I'll be forwarding all complaints directly to Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember, I suggested that when you heard the answer to this, Tommy, that your response would be...
Bogus!
I think it's Bogus! That's it. Can we hear that one more time?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's it. They can do miracles there in the control room.
Here it is. I took a sheet of plain white paper, you know, no lines on it or anything, just a blank sheet of paper, like 8.5 by 11, and using a fountain pen with black ink, all of these things are designed to obfuscate, I wrote my signature on the paper, anywhere in the paper, it really didn't matter. I also wrote something else in the paper. Both were plainly visible. When I looked at my signature through the magnifying glass that I had, I was not at all surprised to find that it was enlarged. But when I looked at the other thing that was on the paper, it wasn't enlarged. What was the second thing that I wrote?
Oh, man.
Now,
I will admit that I thought about this for 10 seconds as you were saying it last week. And I thought, the only feeling I had was that it was a word trick.
Well, I didn't really write anything I didn't write words or letters, but I did use, by your definition, would using the pen on the paper constitute writing?
Assuming that the tip of the pen touched the paper
and
made marks.
Would drawing something be equivalent to writing?
Yeah, I would accept that.
All right, then. All right.
Yeah? Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah?
What I drew was an angle. I drew two lines. So if I drew a 37...
Oh, play it, Dan! Oh, God! Oh, come on! Well, that's no good because you can't draw an angle without sides. And the length of the sides had to have enlarged.
But did they enlarge the angle? You just didn't get it, and it's sour grapes. That's all I can say.
What was the question again? When I looked at the other thing, it wasn't enlarged.
When I looked at the angle, was it enlarged? Come on.
The other thing. I think you could have worded it better.
Well, I tried to word it to make it difficult.
I would have said something like, part of it was enlarged and part of it wasn't. Wouldn't that work better? That way, the lines could have been longer. They would have been. They would have looked longer.
I don't think that was necessarily better. I think it's good just the way it is.
Well, if you do, I think it's bogus. In any event, we do have a winner. It is bogus. Because
would it be better if I said I drew something on the paper?
No, it wouldn't have been better because you had to draw the two lines that made the angle. And those lines were bigger.
Did the angle get bigger? Do we have a winner?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, someone figured it out.
Yeah, sure. We give these prizes away for nothing. The winner this week is Sam Wallace from Moreland, Georgia. And for having his correct answer selected at random from all the correct answers that we got this week, which was none, Sam is
we're just giving Sam the $25.
Sam had the best handwriting, and he's going to get a $25 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which he can get our summer Car Talk baseball cap, perfect for those bad hair days, or in my brother's case, no hair days.
I do have a lot of those.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll have a new, I guess you'd have to call it quasi automotive.
Thank you, Mister. Thank you, man.
Quasi folkloric. I mean, it's folkloric automotive. Has to do with physics.
Ooh.
Chickens.
Really?
It'll come up
in the
third half of today's show. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, you can call us and ask us any questions you'd like.
About anything.
About anything. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name's Stephanie. I'm calling from Ashland, Oregon.
Hi, Stephanie.
How you doing?
Good.
So what's up, Stephanie?
Well, I've got a 79 Volvo station wagon. It's got about 250,000 miles on it.
Wow,
good for you.
And we moved here to Ashland from California, actually, about a year ago. And prior to moving, this problem kind of existed somewhat intermittently, but not on any kind of a consistent basis.
Yeah.
And what happens is when I start the car in the morning and start driving, and I go from first into second, it growls at me. Now, in the hot weather, it doesn't seem to do this. And it doesn't do it if I'm deaccelerating, if I'm shifting down.
Yeah.
It only does it when I'm accelerating. And actually, I can get it to not do it if I'm accelerating, and then I take my foot off the gas and kind of let it coast and slow down just a bit, you know, and then I can kind of wedge it in a little bit without it making that noise.
But it's a second gear noise only.
Second gear.
Only when upshifting.
Yeah.
Huh. And you described it as growling?
Yeah, I mean, it's not kind of quite as harsh as grinding, but yeah. it's not wanting to go in.
And does it seem like it's coming from all around you, or is it pinpointed somewhere like
the transmission?
Pretty much right on the stick shift.
No, it is, huh?
Yeah. Mm.
And it's been doing this for years.
Well, no. It's only really been doing it since we. I mean, really.
All right, I'm going to tell you something here now. I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to make a wild guess here.
No.
What's new?
Here it is. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
When you lived in California, You lived on a level street. And now in Ashland, Oregon, you live on a hill.
Yeah, it's a...
How am I doing?
it's a steady incline, but it's not a big...
Yeah. Hey, it qualifies, right?
Okay, so go ahead.
Wait, I gotta go further.
Okay.
I gotta go further. And when you leave your house, You're heading up.
Yes.
This incline.
Okay.
But no, it doesn't just do it when I'm leaving.
Sherlock Holmes, eat your heart out. Okay. Thanks for calling, Stephanie.
Now that you've given us part one of your harebrained response.
Here's my theory.
Okay.
My theory is there's nothing wrong with your car whatsoever.
Okay.
And
that's good.
What's been happening is you have been shifting too soon.
Okay.
All right.
You put it in first.
Think.
You throw it into second when you really don't have enough speed to be in second, and the car is shaking. It's vibrating. And it never did it before because you were going on a level road. But now the added power necessary to go up that slight incline is making it go...
Jeez, that is so bogus. That's almost as bad as this week's puzzle.
What are you talking about? I pulled out where she lived in California and the hill and the up the hill. How can it be wrong?
Well,
How can it be wrong?
It doesn't answer why it still continues to do it even if I'm driving on flat land.
No.
Sounded so good, didn't it?
It was very good.
All right, have you had anyone look at this thing? Has anyone, for example, checked the level of oil in the transmission?
I took it back to our mechanic in California when we visited last time and presented him with a problem. And, you know, he said that he thought, like, the transmission oil was not right or something, and he was supposed to adjust it, and I don't know if he actually changed the viscosity of it or if he made it higher or something, but it really, quite frankly, didn't make a whole lot of difference, though.
I mean, with all the miles you got on this car, I mean, maybe the transmission oil has never been changed. And you may look in the owner's manual, it may not even mention changing the transmission oil because they never expected the car to go this far. So, I would definitely change the transmission oil.
Okay.
Well, either the problem is inside the transmission, there's something wrong with the second gear synchronizer or something, in which case you're not going to fix that. You'll just wait until it breaks, and then you'll shift from first to third and skip second altogether. It's really overrated. You don't really need second gear.
No. You know our odd-even theory, don't you?
No, I haven't heard this one.
Well, most cars come with five gears, and... Mm-hmm. You don't need all five. There's no question that you don't need all five. And on odd days, you use 1, 3, and 5, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And on Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, you use 2 and 4.
And on Sunday?
Sunday, you stay home because you ran out of gears. Or you back up. I don't know. So you really don't need all of them. So I wouldn't worry about it. I would change the transmission oil, and I wouldn't do anything else. I wouldn't even think about this.
Well, I have a funny feeling that the noise is not really coming from the transmission.
I don't either. I think it's vibrating.
Well, I think it's rather being telegraphed through a bad center bearing. The drive shaft is a two-piece drive shaft, and there's a support bearing on it. And I think you could easily have a bad center bearing.
Yeah.
I would have someone look at the center bearing and the universal joints. I don't think the problem is in the transmission, but if they look at those things and they're all right, just drive it till it breaks, Stephanie.
Yeah. And it wouldn't hurt at all while they're doing this to ask them to change the transmission oil.
Okay.
And stuff a banana in there, maybe. See you later, Steph.
Thanks a lot.
All good right. luck. Thanks a lot for calling.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. I like to read a quick little letter. In fact, it's from a friend of ours, really? Jerry Eisner.
Jerry Eisner.
Jerry Eisner. He was listening to us a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the speed of light and the speed of dark.
Yeah.
And he thought we would enjoy this little limerick, which does not contain the words Nantucket. The word not. Okay. There once was a lady named Bright, whose speed was much faster than light. She left home one day in a relative way and returned the previous night.
Pretty good.
That's like passing yourself on the way in. Thanks, Jerry. We needed that. I don't know why we needed it, but we did.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Larry. I'm from San Diego.
Hi, Larry.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. I have a 14-year-old son who is thinking about driving, and he's saying, you know, Dad, let's buy a car and fix it up so that when I become of driving age, I'll have something to drive.
Pretty hard to say no to that, isn't it? I mean, it's a father-son project. It's what every man thinks about when he has boys.
You do.
At some point, the boys and I are going to restore an old Mustang.
I know. I kind of want to break into a Monty Python song about Tommy. Yeah. Or something, you know?
Tommy had that same dream, except the Mustang had hooves.
Well, yeah. I know. It does sound like a great time. And then the reality of my mechanical ineptness and budget kind of comes to play, and that's where I was hoping you could help me out.
Well, this is good.
I should tell you about is, you know, one of his things that he likes to do is he likes to surf. And so, you know, having something that he can drive places with and maybe camp in or sleep in the back.
So what do you have in mind, Larry?
What do I have in mind?
Yeah.
Stalling. So he gets a job and buys his own car.
Well, I think, we think of the experience of this bonding as being the father and son working side by side, replacing brake lines and putting in new pads, new shoes, and doing whatever it takes, and the father teaching the son. But that might not be the right lesson.
Well, and it might require that you have something to teach. If you don't know anything,
well, that's
then
the thing. Larry said he doesn't have any idea how to do this.
What do you do for a living, Larry?
He's a computer programmer.
I'm a biologist.
Worse. Yeah.
I actually...
You're a marine biologist?
No.
Oh, but, unfortunate.
George Costanza.
How unfortunate you live in San Diego. I mean, go ahead.
Well, that's true.
But I actually, you know, when I was in college, I actually had a VW microbus, as you might expect.
Of course you did.
I had a wonderful book called something like Volkswagen Repairs for the Complete Idiot. Mm-hmm. And
Dummies.
Yeah, well, they do have that same book now, except it's 27,000 pages. I mean, and that vehicle, that Volkswagen, was the only vehicle made, perhaps, that allowed that book to be written. Because it was a simple enough vehicle, and with rudimentary tools, you could and basic knowledge of physics, you could actually fix almost anything on that thing. Most cars aren't like that. And, of course, the consequence of that was the car was a death trap.
Right.
You know, but...
Which is why we pretty much ruled that particular car out.
So that is out.
Yeah. And any car that is made in the last couple of decades is going to be pretty much ruled out in terms of your being able to do much to it
right.
at all.
But because you live so close to Mexico... You have a unique opportunity down to Mexico and get your son a nice
57 Chevy.
Ranchero.
Oh, a Ranchero.
Oh, yeah. Ah, now we're talking, huh? For those of you who don't know what a Ranchero is, it's akin to the El Camino, which is basically a car that was cut off at the behind the front seat, in the back of which was a pickup truck kind of thing.
Right.
So I think that should be your quest. I think you ought to go to Mexico for a few weekends and search out a Ranchero.
See that? Now, it turns out that the bonding experience is not, rather than being replacing brake lines and whatever else, the bonding experience comes from the creativity involved in figuring out what to buy, trips to Mexico. Who knows what else he'll learn on his way to Mexico? Never mind. Yeah, I like it. I say go for it, Larry.
Okay.
That's the vehicle for him. His surfboard will fit in the back, and it'll be the coolest thing. When he sees it, he'll fall in love with it.
Okay.
See you, Larry.
Thanks for your
help. Not going to do it, are you, Larry?
No, he's not going to do it, but that's all right.
You did say thanks, and I know you're just being polite because you think we're nuts.
Well, I knew that before I called.
But just remember, it was my brother's idea, not mine.
No, I actually think it's a pretty good idea.
I knew that.
And if we get it done, we'll send you a picture.
I'd love to
see it. All right. See you, Larry.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, our producer wants us to take a short break now and prepare for the rest of the show. He says it'll be better if we cram.
He didn't say cram. He said scram. The rest of the show will be better if we scram.
Oh, okay. We'll be back in a minute.
I need some time to think. I need time to feel. Life from day to day gets too real. Sage yonder mountaintop, a soothing sight. Gonna follow the sun till the moon's blue light. Southbound 395. Never felt so alive.
And even though King Kong waddles back and rips another antenna off of NPR headquarters every time he hears us say it, this is NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the Walton Family Foundation, where opportunity takes root. More information is available at waltonfamilyfoundation.org.
She was once undocumented. Now she writes about the undocumented immigrants we often ignore.
Day laborers, housekeepers, delivery men, people who don't inspire hashtags or t-shirts.
That's coming up on Code Switch.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
Quasi Automotive involves chickens, is folkloric. That's what you've said.
I said all that stuff.
You said that.
What the heck was I thinking?
In the first half of the show.
Really?
Or the second half. Not in the third half, because this is the third half.
Oh, and this is the time we're supposed
to do. This is the time you're supposed to come up with it.
Yeah. Here it is.
Go ahead.
You remember the story, the Bridge of San Luis Rey?
Oh, man.
Thornton Wilder.
Oh. The first chapter of that book was maybe the best writing I have ever come across.
It went downhill fast after that, and so did the people on the bridge.
Chapter 2 stunk.
Well, this story is the Bridge of Tom and Ray.
Yeah.
In Borneo, there is a bridge connecting two islands constructed of bamboo lashed together with hemp. And it's been used for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Pedestrian traffic, vehicular traffic.
Vehicular?
Both directions.
Really?
Except the bridge has a weight limit. It's 4 miles long, this bridge. It has a weight limit of 20 tons.
Mm.
So one day, a truck pulls up to the bridge ready to cross, and the officials stop him, and they say, we have to weigh you. And so he drives onto the scale, and the truck is full of, I think, pigs, sedated pigs.
Well, this is not the old chickens flying in the truck thing.
Sedated pigs.
Sedated pigs.
Yeah. Pig iron and dead chickens.
Got it.
Got it?
Yeah.
And with the driver on the scale in the truck with all the, he weighs exactly 20 tons. So the guy at the other end gets the signal, and he waves off traffic. Everyone has to stop, and the bridge is emptied. And this guy is allowed to drive over the bridge. You got it? He's just making it, 20 tons. He's right at the limit. You with me?
I'm with you. Yeah. I.
As he drives across.
I know he's not going to make it.
Oh, no, he's done for. As he drives across, a sparrow begins to follow alongside.
No! No!
And begins to hover.
Oh, man!
Over the truck.
Yeah.
Flapping its wings. So he's halfway across the bridge, and there's the sparrow flying alongside the truck and now over the truck. And just when he's a little beyond the halfway point, the sparrow lands on the truck.
Oh, man. Bummer!
What does the driver do to keep the truck and the sedated pigs and the dead chickens from plunging into
the abyss.
The abyss. Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard or a 500-gallon Redwood hot tub with micro-massaging jets and hydraulic butt scratches and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. Or you can email your answer from cartalk.com. If you'd like to talk to us, the number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255.
78-2.
Just another
That's
twist.
That's a nice one.
Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, my name's Stan Mitchell. I'm calling from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Hi, Stan. Stan.
How are you?
From Lost Wages, Nevada.
That's right.
What's shaking?
My wife insists on turning the air conditioner on in the car when we're on the freeway going about 75 miles an hour. And I tell her that we might pop a belt doing that. She thinks I'm nuts, and I always tell her to put the clutch in, let the engine go to idle, then turn the air conditioner on, and then get on down the road. Am I nuts or what?
Yeah.
I am nuts.
Yeah.
Well, we got a letter about this, and some guy had the same opinion as you, that the thing should not be engaged when, in fact, you're moving at high speed, because you're taking a compressor, which is just sitting there, and all of a sudden you're
asking it to spin at 3,000 RPM.
Right.
Right? And it seems contrary to all the laws of nature, and it seems it's something that's destined to ruin the compressor. So we agree with this fellow, and a week or two later, we get a nasty letter from the NAIA, National Air Conditioner Institute of America, or some such thing. And they contend that, no, first of all, most compressors do cut in and out. In fact, many cars now have a wide-open throttle cutout. So when you floor the gas to try to pass,
right,
in order to gain more power, it cuts out the compressor. And then what happens when you back off in the gas? And the engine is still going at 4,000 RPM.
It just kicks back
in
again.
Kicks the thing back in, and they contend that you're not going to do any damage to the compressor. Bear in mind, however, because they are the NAIA, they are in the business of selling
and
new
fixing
and reconditioned air-conditioner compressors. So, I mean,
right,
certainly to be on the safe side, it would be nice to engage the compressor only when the engine is turning slowly.
Right.
But I think in the giant scheme of things, I wouldn't be too worried about it.
My concern was popping a belt out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh. Yeah,
well, I mean, the truth is, I think theoretically what you say is correct. On the other hand, it may have such insignificance, such a small probability of happening, because don't forget, nobody else on the planet, except you and the guy who wrote to us 10 years ago, has this theory. Everybody else, the other 180 million drivers, are just flipping the thing on whenever they feel like
it. Yeah, it's hot. Turn on the AC, will you? I'm dying in here.
And none of their serpentine belts have jumped, broken, or done anything, nor have their compressors broken, for the most part.
Yeah.
And so the likelihood of it really doing any damage is so small as to be not worth arguing with your wife about. I mean, with a buddy, you can argue about stuff like this.
But not with your wife.
And you will have all kinds of discussion about the theories and forces, but not with your wife.
Well, see, guys tend to choose battles like this with their wives because they think they can bamboozle them with things like F equals MA. And you throw a few equations around and your wife says, I give up. I don't
right.
care.
I didn't take that
Whatever
course.
You want to do, hon, you just do it.
Well, she's not doing it anyway.
No. Right. Well, she knows.
She's not going to
In
anyway.
Fact, worse than that, when you're not in the car, she's turning it on, off, on, off, on, off.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, so don't worry about it. And don't worry. You should always carry an extra serpentine belt with you. Just to be on the safe side.
It's unlikely that it's going to do any noticeable damage to anything. Very unlikely.
Okay.
Although, theoretically possible, but you don't want to be theoretically right. It's not worth it.
All right. It's no fun.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Ask those Pons and Fleischmann guys. See you, Stan.
Okay, thank
you.
Hey,
thanks for calling, Stan.
Bye-bye. Right.
Bye-bye. Hey, you know what time it is now?
It's time to harvest the tomatoes growing out of Berman's desk chair.
No. It's time to play Stump the Chumps! This is the part of the show where we drag out a caller from a previous show to see if our advice was any good.
More importantly, why it wasn't. So who's our lucky contestant
it's
this week?
Michelle from Spokane, Washington. I know you're going to remember Michelle.
No.
Well, she had a philosophical question for us. Can $170 ever be too much to pay for a car?
It's coming back to me now.
Michelle called us a couple of years back because her new husband, Sean, had just bought her a $170 1974 Datsun pickup truck.
I remember.
Which was Michelle's dream car. Then Sean confesses that it's missing a rear window, and there's a tangle of wires on the front seat, and there are a few other things.
I'm standing there, and he's putting on the new gas cap because he says, you know, it didn't come with one, and that's an overrated car part anyway.
Gas cap? And then I know it's like worrying about the curtains on the Titanic. You've got a $170 time bomb here. You worried about a gas cap?
Well, and then I noticed that it doesn't have seat belts, and he says, oh, it might need new brakes, a new engine, and a new clutch. And I said, uh-huh.
I have to say, before we discuss the individual issues here, that Sean is a man after my own heart. This sounds like a great vehicle. Man,
Jesus.
I love it already.
See, every one of my brother's cars has been rescued from the scrap heap. I mean, he's been at the 11th hour. He's been there staying the hand of the guy about to throw the switch on the crusher.
Hey, that way the car owes you something, you know what I mean?
So what did we tell Michelle anyway?
Well, you deferred to me because of the philosophical nature of the question. You
well, more likely the condition of the car dictated...
I told her she should spend the money, fix it up, and accept that it would not be trouble-free, but embrace that as part of the adventure of life. Basically, I said, go for it. You won't regret it, Michelle.
Okay, let's see how you did. Michelle, are you there?
I sure am.
All right, before we find out what happened, this doesn't sound good already.
I didn't like the tone of voice.
We need you, Michelle, to confirm that we have not spoken since your last appearance on Car Talk, and I'm likely to speak in the future, I guess. Is that true?
That is true.
And that the answer you're about to give here on Stump the Chumps has not been influenced by our staff, the staff of NPR, or the home computer divorce program that we sent you.
That's also true.
So how did it all work out? Was it your dream car after all?
And are you still married?
Well, I'm still married, happily, but the car was definitely not the truck of my dream.
Oh. What happened?
You will notice, Michelle, you probably remember, that I distanced myself from this entire discussion because I knew that my brother was going to give you bogus advice, and I just didn't want to be directly involved.
Well, actually, everything was going pretty well right after the show. He was driving it to and from school and work, which was our plan for the car.
He was driving it?
Well, yeah, and he wouldn't let me drive it, and we'll get to that a little later.
Yeah.
And he actually made some fairly interesting modifications. He actually installed a very sophisticated keyless ignition system. that one of the pieces that he didn't tell me when he got the truck was that it didn't actually come with keys. And that to turn it on, you had to do some sort of elaborate ritual where you honked the horn and some other thing.
And you throw a pinch of salt over your shoulder like that too, right? Yeah,
this is a vehicle for Jerry Olandella.
Right.
So he actually installed some sophisticated thing where you turned some switch where the headlights were supposed to be and then pressed some button where the radio was supposed to be, and that actually started the car. And there was actually something very complicated about that. Like, it seemed to me that when I was helping him fix it one time, that if you didn't do that in the right order, like, something very terrible could happen.
Yeah. Well, we had a fellow named, my brother just mentioned, named Jerry Orlandella, who worked for us for many years, and who decided that having switches for, like, you know, the blower motor and the windshield wipers and the directionals was taking too much of a chance because switches fail. Uh-huh. So he removed all that stuff and left all the wires dangling under the dash. And when he needed wipers, he would reach down and he'd say, I got to twist a blue and then a white with a blue stripe and a red. Okay, I got low speed. Headlights, yeah, that's the white wire and the brown wire. And
he had all the wires memorized, and he could do anything that you could do with switches.
And nobody could steal his car because then he didn't say, what the heck? Somebody was already here trying to steal it. So you had a similar car.
Yeah.
So then what happened?
So that was there, and he also did some other sort of cosmetic modifications. He painted some beautiful flames on the hood, which were really attractive, but I was always a little fearful that that was sort of...
My brother always goes for the real flames.
Well, exactly. I was afraid that that was what was to come, that this, these flames were foreshadowing something.
Yes, yeah. Yes, they were tempting the fate, so to speak.
So he did some other things. You know, he got a gas cap. He put some seatbelts in. It was running great. Everything was fine. It was starting to come together. And then one day he was driving it, and apparently it started blowing white smoke and just stopped.
Oh, head gasket blow.
Well, that's what he thought. So he got the gaskets to replace the head gasket. And when he actually opened up the engine, it looked like the head was actually warped. Mm-hmm. And here's where it gets sketchy because I don't understand mechanical stuff.
This is when you went to visit your mother, right?
Well, this is where I just kind of sat in the house. But he then got a new head for the thing. He had it machined, apparently, and actually could never just get it back together. So that's the answer. That's the end of it, is that it worked great until he broke it, and now he can't fix it. And those are his words. So it's sort of sitting in our carport, but now we've actually demoted it to sort of the yard next to the carport.
He just can't let go, can he?
Well, he can't let go. I can't let go. And the frank matter is that we would have to pay someone to tow this thing, and I'm not sure that that's really what, you know, that's going to be worth it.
Yeah, see, I've misunderstood everything here because I thought that this car was for you.
Well, it was for me. I mean, the idea was that he was going to fix it up, and then it was going to be my dream.
Oh, but see, he fell in love with it, and he didn't want to give it to you.
Well, but I mean, he didn't want to try to teach me how to start the darn thing.
No, I think, Michelle, that this was his dream car. I don't think he ever intended for you to drive it.
I don't think he ever did
either. He would have put one stumbling block after another in front of you. And of course, this is the ultimate. I bet you, late at night, if you go check, he sneaks out of bed. And he's out there sitting in the truck.
Well, that could be. I can assure you it's not moving.
In the dark. Yeah, he ain't driving.
It's not moving.
He's just sitting there and breathing heavy. Anyway.
Oh, well.
Geez, well.
At least you're still married.
We're still married. We still have the truck. So, you know, it's not over yet.
It's
not over yet. Well, we'll call you back in another year.
Well, maybe you should. Because by then, something may have happened.
We will. Someone's going to keep an eye on you, too.
Hey, thanks for playing Stump the Chumps, Michelle.
Thank you.
See you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Jeez.
Well, she sounds like a lot of fun. She could take a joke, too.
Oh, man. Well, if you hear someone you'd like us to bring back for Stump the Chumps, email us your suggestions from cartalk.com, will you?
Well, it's happened again. You've squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy, Frogman Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman, and our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor. Just back from the New Delhi Clam Belly Octopus Jelly Gambarelli Tagliatelle and Roast Beef a la Kelly All Night Deli is John Bugsy Lawler. Where does she come up with this stuff? Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our anger, very sneaky, our personal hygiene advisor from the Tokyo office is O Tekashawa. Our staff bicycle tester is Maya Sertz. Our videographer from the Tel Aviv office is Shlomo Replay. This is very sneaky, Tony. Our Swedish pessimist is Gunnar D. Days. Our employee morale boosters are Phil LaCrap and his brother Luke LaCrap. Our Russian chauffeur is Pikoff and Dropoff. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. And the head of our Working Mother Support Group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is U. Louis Dewey, known to particle physicists in flip-flops in Harvard Square as Huey Louis Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
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 We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 2026. Subscribe to our weekly podcast and check out our taste-efficient clothing and best-of collections all over at cartalk.com. Also this week at CarTalk.com, complete details on how to get rid of your old car without having to sell it.
Does this involve throwing the keys on the front seat, leaving it unlocked, and calling Cousin Nunzio's tip line?
Well, actually, no. It's the CarTalk Vehicle Donation Program, where you can donate your car and benefit your favorite local public radio station.
Details available all week at CarTalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though the lost city of Atlantis decides to stay lost for a few more millennia whenever we say it, this is NPR.